the offering is made after the talks, the verbal offerings. But because we got a late start due to the massive floods in Bombay, we did not want to keep Srila Prabhupada waiting from his normal lunchtime. Generally, the way it is done is during the aarti. The spiritual master takes the prasad just before that, while the devotees are offering the flowers and so forth. But this day is for his pleasure, for his convenience. So we should not make his schedule around our lateness. We should make our schedule around the factor of what is most pleasurable to him. In fact, this is the very essence of spiritual life, to please the spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada yasya prasada nagati kutopi. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has prayed that if the spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna is pleased. But if the spiritual master is not pleased, there is no power within all the three worlds that you can acquire that will please Krishna. Acharyopasanam. One who hears from the acharya, he knows things as they are. Everyone else, however traditionally religious we may be, or however learned we are in the scriptures, our approach to God is based on mental speculation. Without receiving the divine order of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot understand things as they are. Tad vijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchet. The Vedas explain that without hearing from a guru, you cannot understand the Vedas as they are. Bhagavad Gita was translated perhaps over 100 versions in the English language. Not a single person ever became a devotee of Krishna. And the entire Gita is simply saying to become a devotee of Krishna. Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad jajim na namaskarum. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. Matta parataram nanyat kinchir asti dhananjayat. Mai sarvamidam protam sutri manigana eva. Krishna says there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo mokshayishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I shall relieve you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashasmi tattvataha. Only by pure devotion can I be understood as I am. The Gita teaches only one thing from the beginning to the end. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitrami Damuttamam, Pratyakshavagamam Dharamam, Shushukam Karatam Avyayam. What was Arjuna's realization after hearing from Krishna? That Krishna, you are the supreme Brahman. You are the supreme purifier. You are the supreme cause of all causes. I surrender to you. Bahunam janmana mante gyanavam pampavadyate vasudeva saravamiti samahatma sudurlava. After many births and deaths, When one finally comes to the point of knowledge, Krishna says, one surrenders to me, Vasudev, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. The Gita is teaching to become Krishna's devotee, to surrender to Him. Yesterday, we celebrated Janamastami. Krishna explains the divine nature of His appearance. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyakva deham punarajanma naiti mameti swarajana. O Arjuna, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and my activities never takes birth again in this material world but attains my abode. Mamupetya punarajanma dukalayam ashashvatam napnavanti mahatmana samsidim paramam gata. That the great souls, they surrender to me. They make me the object of their goal of life. And thus they never have to suffer the miseries of material existence, but they attain my abode. So how is it? Over 100 translations in the English language of the Bhagavad Gita, and the Gita only deals with one subject ultimately, to surrender to Krishna, to become His devotee, to know Him as the cause of all causes. And not a single person of all the millions of people that studied Bhagavad Gita, including the greatest, most proficient professors and scholars, not a single one even considered becoming a devotee of Krishna. Naham prakashya saravasya yogamaya samavrata mudhoyam navajaneti lokomam ajamavyayam. The reason is very simple. Although the words of Krishna are right before their eyes, they cannot see it. Because Krishna does not reveal the truth, even of the scriptures. Unless you approach the scripture according to His command. And what is His command? Tad vidi pranipate na pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastut darshana. If you want to know the truth, you must approach a bona fide spiritual master. You must inquire submissively and render service unto Him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Therefore, acharya upasanam. One who hears from the acharya understands everything as it is. But whatever you try to understand through your own intellectualization, through the teachings of various scholars or other so-called religious reformers, you cannot understand the truth. The truth is only revealed when the truth reveals Himself. It is not by your prowess that you can ever conceive of the truth. The truth is a supreme person. And the truth remains hidden until He decides by His sweet independent will to reveal Himself to you. Therefore you must approach the truth according to His command. Tam gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sreyautamam. Bhagavatam says if you want to know truth, you must approach Guru. So Srila Prabhupada wrote one translation of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Why did he name it as it is? From this purely scholarly point of view, there were far superior people writing Bhagavad Gita. After all, Srila Prabhupada was going to college, but he left his college because Gandhi's non-participation movement with the British, he decided to become a follower of Gandhi. Therefore, he could not continue college because all the colleges were run by the British. So from the scholarly point of view, he had no degrees. And there are multiple PhDs that have translated Gita. Why they cannot give anyone the enlightenment of the truth of the Gita? Srila Prabhupada wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because he was a surrendered devotee of the Lord. Evam parampara praptamidam rajashaya vidhu. Krishna says that this knowledge must be received from Guru in disciplic succession. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us that I have not written this book. This is being written by all the previous acharyas. I am simply like the instrument, like the pen within their hands. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would have the devotees read Bhagavad Gita to him. Now, from a materialistic point of view, this would seem to be egoistic. Every night, having people read your own books to you. But when Srila Prabhupada would hear Bhagavad Gita, he would not hear his voice. He would hear exclusively the voice of his Guru Maharaj and all the previous acharyas. And therefore, hearing the sweetness of their teachings brought the ultimate ecstasy to his life. When we would read to him the nectar of devotion, he would hear the voice of Srimati Radharani speaking. She is the author of that book. It was written by Rupa Goswami, but it is the incarnation of Srimati Radharani. When we would read Krishna book to him, he would say to us, I have not written this book, Krishna has written this book. An acharya is one who selflessly surrenders to the previous acharyas. Therefore, he knows things as they are. I remember one time a newspaper reporter was very challenging. They said, Bhaktivedanta Swami, I want to know, are you perfect? Srila Prabhupada replied, I may be perfect, I may not be perfect. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, I am not perfect. But I am exclusively repeating the words of my Guru Maharaj. Om Vishnupad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And therefore, because I am only repeating his words, everything I say is 100% perfect. And I remember when we were all just very new devotees, we didn't know hardly anything. You're not this body, Krishna's God, chant Hare Krishna. Bas, that's all we knew. Srila Prabhupada told us, go out and preach. We did not know so many slokas to defend the absolute truth. He said, you simply repeat what you have heard from me, whatever quantity it is, and it is perfect. Don't speculate. Don't add, don't subtract. Simply repeat what you have heard from me. If you've heard one thing, repeat that. If you've heard two things, repeat that. If you've heard three things, repeat that. But preach. And your preaching will be perfect. But, he said, I have written so many books. You read them, you learn more and more and more and more. The more you learn, the more service you can offer to the world. This is the great gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us. The gift that he has given us, we will never understand. It is the gift of divine love. It is the gift of utter sacrifice. Of his body, his mind, his words, his very life. For the welfare of each and every one of us. Srila Prabhupada explains that it was at that great and famous moment It took place in Calcutta. The address was number 1, Ultadanga Junction Road. It was an old building. And Srila Prabhupada was brought by his friend Narendra to the roof of that building. And there, seated on a dais, under the shade of a beautiful jackfruit tree, in the evening moonlight, was sitting that great empowered acharya, Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa Parivrajaka Acharya, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was speaking on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Srila Prabhupada, not knowing who this sadhu was or anything about him, he bowed down, as was the tradition, just at the feet of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And as he was getting up, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's voice echoed through the mouth of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The great command came. You are a very intelligent young man. You should take the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and you should spread it in the English language throughout all the world. Srila Prabhupada, who was then a follower of Gandhi, began to defend his position that as long as we are dependent on the British, no one will take our philosophy seriously. First, we must gain independence. That's what we are doing in Gandhi's movement. Then we can teach Gita and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message to the world. Then people will listen. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied, no. There is only one urgency in this world, and that is Krishna consciousness. There is only one problem in this world, and that is a lack of Krishna consciousness. Political parties will always be fighting. There will always be changes in this relative world. This is no concern to us. The propagation of Krishna consciousness is the absolute necessity, and it must be preached now. Otherwise, this world is in a hopeless condition. When Srila Prabhupada heard this, he became very happy. He told us many times, my Guru Maharaj defeated me. And I was most happy to be defeated. This is similar to Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna was presenting arguments. But when he heard Krishna, he was blissfully willing to accept defeat at the feet of his guru and surrender. This is the qualification of a bona fide disciple, that he humbles himself pridelessly before his guru, that I know nothing, you know everything, please instruct me. Srila Prabhupada has taught us this example. If we want to be bona fide disciples, we have to be willing to accept defeat before our guru. We have to come before our guru with no pride. We have to come before our spiritual master, I know nothing. I am fool number 1. Please instruct me. Sanatana Goswami also approached Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya in this way. I am a scholar in Persian, I am a scholar in Bengali, I am a scholar in Sanskrit. I'm wealthy, I'm learned, I'm handsome, I have everything anyone could possibly want, and I'm considered the greatest spiritual personality. But to tell you the truth, before you, I realize I'm nothing and I have nothing. I'm fool number one. If you consider yourself fool number two, you cannot hear from your guru properly. You have to accept the position that I am fool number one. Doesn't matter how much influence you have, how much money you have, how many scholarships or degrees you have, how many tapasyas you've performed, how many names of God you've chanted. These things mean nothing. When you come before your guru, you are fool number one. And if you are not, you cannot learn from him. Not properly. The seed of bhakti is being blocked by ego, by pride. So Srila Prabhupada taught us in this way. He came before his guru and he accepted the position of defeat at his feet. And at that moment, within his heart, he accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur as his Guru Maharaj, as his eternal master and savior. The seed of bhakti was planted within his heart at that time. And throughout his life, his main ambition was to water that seed. He was a grihastha. He would sometimes lament that almost all of my god brothers are brahmacharis and sannyasis. They get to be with Guru Maharaj all the time, traveling with him, preaching with him. I have a business, I have children, I have wife, so many responsibilities. But he knew that this was the will of his guru, so he accepted it. And it was the will. Whenever Srila Prabhupada would write, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a daily newspaper with spiritual subject matter. It was called The Harmonist. And so many people wrote, and they had so many editors, and most of the things written were not included. Because if there was the slightest tinge of philosophy which wasn't strictly according to the teachings of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, it would not be included. But when Abhay Charande, who was later initiated as Abhay Charanaravinda, whenever he would write, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "It is my law that whatever he writes, you print. No question of editing. No question of considering. Whatever Abhay writes, you print." Why? Because he knew he would not speak anything that he had not heard from his Guru Maharaj. It was at Radha Kund, during the famous Braj Mandala Parikram of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this particular occasion took place at Koshi. They were camped at Koshi. And all the devotees were going on Parikram to go to the Sheshashayi Mandir in Brajadham. But Srila Prabhupada stayed at his feet of his guru. Everyone else was coming in and going out, but he stayed throughout the day simply hearing from his Guru Maharaj. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada tells us, was very pleased with him. He said, this young man, he said, because he hears so nicely, everything he says will be perfect. So try to understand that Srila Prabhupada, the Supreme Master, the Paramahamsa Guru, he taught us in his life that his qualification was that he was the perfect disciple. In Bombay, Srila Prabhupada, he had his business here. He was approached by one of his very, very dearly beloved god brothers, who he accepted in his heart with such love and devotion. In fact, he accepted him as his Shiksha Guru. His name is His Divine Grace Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami Maharaj. And also, His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Saranga Maharaj was also here. And they approached Srila Prabhupada and asked him, "Can you help us to start a center here? You know so many people. You have so much influence." So Srila Prabhupada, practically day and night, he would do whatever was absolutely necessary for his business, and the rest of the time he was simply in kirtan with these great Vaishnavas. And they would go and set up various programs in different halls and at people's homes. Srila Prabhupada would lead the kirtan. Srila Sridhar Dev Maharaj would give the lecture. And then Bhakti Saranga Maharaj would give the presentation of the temple to raise funds. So between the three of them, they dedicated their lives to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission. And between the three of them, they acquired a beautiful place, only about 10 minutes from here. It is still present, the Gaudiya Math. And they established a beautiful temple and preaching center. And they called Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to come to install the deities of Radha and Krishna. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came, Srila Sridhara Maharaj and Srila Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, they were so happy with Srila Prabhupada's great, great devotion and his expert preaching. They appealed to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that we are sannyasis, we have to preach and travel. But this Abhay Charan, Charanaravinda, he is such a first-class man. We think that he should leave his worldly responsibilities and he should be the president of this mat. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied, "No." He said, "He is doing just what I want him to do. And he will do everything in due course of time, you just see." So Srila Prabhupada, although he appeared to be a businessman, factually he was simply a surrendered soul to the divine plan of his Guru Maharaj. And at the proper time, by Krishna's divine arrangement, he left his home to reside in Vrindavan. And there, in deep, deep contemplation and prayer, he was appealing to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Rupa Goswami and all the previous acharyas to empower him to do the work of his spiritual master. And of course we know the story. How much faith, how much hope he had on the basis of his Guru's order. He left his home at Vrindavan. 70 years old, no money, no friends, on a cargo ship across the Atlantic, several heart attacks. When he arrived in New York City, he had no place to stay. He was staying with crazy drug addicts and alcoholics. People threatened his life. People kicked him out into the streets in the middle of the winter. He left Vrindavan for this. He appealed to so many people for help, but no one wanted to help. He was struggling alone. But he had only one possession. The gift that his guru had given him. Infinite compassion for the sufferings of the forgetful living entities in this world. His heart yearned, his heart cried to see his brothers and sisters from Goloka Vrindavan separated from Krishna and suffering the repetition of birth and death. It was unbearable. Therefore, all of his sufferings, all of his struggles, all of his problems were insignificant compared to the heaviness in his heart when he saw the sufferings of others. Therefore, he continued on. What is our position? We have our service. The slightest difficulty and we become disturbed in our faith. We want to give up. We want to go somewhere else. We want to do something else. We become discouraged. This is all due to selfishness. It is because we still think that we are the enjoyers. But Srila Prabhupada showed us what is a real devotee. Srila Prabhupada was willing to suffer. He was willing to suffer all the tortures of hell if necessary, if that's what it took to be enjoyed by his guru and Krishna. In fact, it says in the Bhagavatam that the topmost service of all services is to accept suffering, even at the risk of death, to show compassion to others. We read about it, but when we see it before our eyes, then we can understand. Srila Prabhupada's sacrifice was something that we'll never understand. We can only pray that someday we can appreciate even a little. When he was in New York City, his greatest joy, his greatest happiness was when anybody would even show the slightest little spark of desire to understand Krishna. One of the first people who became attracted to Prabhupada was a very crazy boy. What was his name? I know him very well. I've met him many times. He's still a very crazy boy. His name was something Nelson. Robert Nelson. This Robert Nelson, he had no material qualifications. He was very slow, mentally, physically, everything. He had no money. He was a little bit retarded, kindly. Because of that, he was getting a little money from welfare. Srila Prabhupada was giving lectures at this Dr. Mishra's institute on Riverside Drive. And it was mostly old ladies that would come. And Dr. Mishra wouldn't even let him speak because he would always be pounding against Mayavad philosophy, and Dr. Mishra was a self-professed Mayavad. So he would just let Prabhupada sing. He thought he sang very nicely. But this Robert Nelson, he told me that he used to go to the back of the room after Prabhupada would chant. While Dr. Mishra was talking, he would ask questions to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw, this person is interested to learn. He had no qualifications. He only had one. He had a little tiny interest to learn. Prabhupada gave his whole life for this person. Prabhupada had no money. He said, Prabhupada had a little apartment, not even an apartment. He was just sharing a little flat with someone else, a crazy drug addict. Prabhupada brought him. He said, would you like me to cook for you? Prabhupada said this. Would you like me to cook for you? He said, yes, I will cook nice Indian foods for you. He said, yes. So Robert Nelson, Prabhupada had no money, so Robert Nelson got some of his welfare money, and they went to the vegetable market, and Prabhupada started shopping for vegetables. And I don't know if you know America. In America, there's a set price. Prabhupada wasn't used to this. Prabhupada would go to the store, and they'd say, he'd go to the cash register, they'd say, oh, this is $2 for this cauliflower. Prabhupada said, I'll give you $1. Robert Nelson was telling me this story. They said, sir, in this country, we do not do things like this. Prabhupada would start arguing with them. Actually, he would go to the produce, and he would just, whatever he wanted to pay, ultimately the person gave it to him for that. They broke all the conventions and all the rules. Robert Nelson said, I couldn't believe it. I was arguing with Prabhupada right in front of the man. He said, I'll give you $1 for this. No, it costs $2. Robert Nelson said, Prabhupada, we don't do things like this in this country. And the cashier would say, sir, we do not do things like this in this country. Prabhupada said, well, this is for Krishna and it's going to be prasad. You give me, who's Krishna? Who's prasad? Anyways, just take it. Give me a... Every day they would shop, it would be like this. And Prabhupada would say, this is Krishna's money, we should not waste. He said, we should be very frugal with Krishna's money. And then they'd go home to this little flat. Actually, sometimes, at one time, Prabhupada was kicked out and he would go to Robert Nelson's little flat. Just a little apartment. And Prabhupada would set up his pots. He had that three-pier, that with rice in one pot and tiffin with holes in it. Rice in one, and sabji in another, and dal in another, and he'd make chapatis while that was going on. So he'd be cooking like this. And then after he'd cook, he'd serve it to Robert Nelson, and they'd eat together. They'd take prasad together. First Prabhupada would offer it to his Guru Maharaj. A very beautiful scene. And then after taking prasad together, Prabhupada would wash all the plates. Because he knew Robert Nelson didn't know how to get them clean. At first, Robert Nelson, but it wasn't clean, so Prabhupada said, I'll wash the plates, I'll wash the pots. He did everything. He did all the cutting, all the cooking, because this man was too much, not even able to do the simplest things. You notice, most Indian gurus that come to the West, they're looking for big, big politicians and millionaires, so that their name becomes very famous. Prabhupada didn't care who you were. If you had the slightest inclination for Krishna, you were greater than the greatest in his heart. And then Robert Nelson told me that after Prabhupada would cook, and after they would take prasad, and after Prabhupada would clean, Robert Nelson would say, Prabhupada, would you like to stay in my bed? Prabhupada would say, no. In India, Vaishnavas sleep on floor. So they would just sleep out, they would just lay on the floor together, and they would just talk. Prabhupada would be preaching to him, laying on the floor next to him on his left side. For digestion purposes, left side. It's the way sadhus are. And they would just, Prabhupada would talk. And they would, I asked Robert Nelson, what did he talk about? And he said, everything. He would talk about his guru. He would talk about the holy name. He would tell me stories of Lord Chaitanya, stories of Krishna, stories of when he lived in Vrindavan. Weeks and weeks and weeks it was like this. But this boy, he wasn't making any commitment. And gradually he just disappeared. And then there is the wonderful pastime of when some devotees helped him get a little storefront on 22nd Avenue on the Lower East Side of New York. And he started holding Bhagavad Gita classes, but practically no one was coming. And as he was walking down Houston Street, which is just a block away from his storefront, he happened to meet Hayagriva, whose name was then Howard Wheeler. And Hayagriva approached Prabhupada because he had just come from India with Keith Ham, who later became Kirtanananda Swami. And Hayagriva approached him and said, are you coming from India? And Prabhupada said, are you? He said, no, I'm not from India. But are you? And Prabhupada said, yes, and I am teaching Bhagavad Gita. Please come and tell me if you think this is a proper place. Then he invited him to come. In this way, the Hare Krishna movement began. Gradually, more and more people started coming. And Prabhupada would have kirtans at Tompkins Square Park. And two devotees, later they became Brahmananda and Achyutananda. They used to dance in the kirtans. And even though they were not even following the regulative principles or anything, simply because they would dance at kirtans, the way Prabhupada showed them with their arms raised, Prabhupada was so happy. He was so overjoyed. Even 10 years later, he used to remember that I remember when Achyutananda and Brahmananda would dance in Tompkins Square Park. They had no other qualifications, but they decided to dance. And he showered them with his mercy, with his love. And later they became his initiated disciples also. So how did Prabhupada bring these people to the movement? Yes, his philosophy was the highest, most developed philosophy on earth. The spiritual realizations he was offering was the most sublime spiritual experiences, the ultimate realization of God, Radha Krishna in Vrindavan. But it was not for this reason that these people became devotees. Later on they understood these things. It was because Prabhupada more than anyone they ever met knew how to love them, knew how to love their souls, and knew how to express his love for their soul. Prabhupada would say anything or do anything to raise a person's consciousness. Later on, should I continue or is it getting too late? It's raining, so you have nothing else to do anyway, correct? And one darshan, I personally gave him a rose one day, and he was holding this rose. And he had a garland of very simple wild flowers. And he was explaining Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneously one and different. There was only about three devotees there, myself and two others. We were sitting at Prabhupada's feet. It was an evening darshan. He would give about 2 hours darshan every night. And he was sitting on his asana. And he was talking to us, and he said, just like this rose and these flowers. He said, they are both flowers, so they are one.
But still, one is a rose and one is a flower. The rose is better. This is one indifference.
Of course, for myself, I certainly am of no significance to discuss my relationship with Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada, this was his glory, that he would give special mercy even to the most insignificant. Why I am here in Bombay is no accident. Because in all the world, I traveled throughout the entire world looking for a guru, through America, through Europe, through the Middle East. I was traveling throughout India for over a year. The first place I met my Guru Maharaj was in Bombay. And I did not know how it happened. There was no plan. I was just about to leave. There was no plan. I was just about to leave. I was just passing through on my way somewhere else. And I happened to be walking down the street and I saw a big billboard, Hare Krishna Festival, Cross Maidan. I said, where is Cross Maidan? They said, if it was more than 2 blocks away, I never would have gone. They said, it's 2 blocks away. I might as well go. So I went, and I talked to some devotees, and I was thinking, these people are very nice, but they're not the type of sadhus I can relate to. I was living in Himalayas, matted hair, old dhoti, and fasting all the time, and just sleeping on river banks, following all the rituals, the sadhus. And I was thinking, these people, they all have such nice new clothes, and they have tape recorders, and this is not the way. What kind of sadhus are these? They drive in cars. Third class train is the only way a sadhu will ever travel. He's not walking bare, they wear shoes. I was thinking, they're nice, but, you know, they're Americans. What do you expect? But they told me that Srila Prabhupada is speaking tonight. Just stay till tonight. All right. So all of a sudden, about 20,000 people come into this big tent. Huh? It was a huge crowd, and I was just in the middle of everybody. And I said, who is this? I said to one devotee. He said, this is Guru Maharaj. I was thinking, his name is Guru Maharaj. I'll wait till he's done and then Prabhupada will come on. So he was sitting on a Vyasasana. I was thinking, why is Guru Maharaj sitting on Prabhupada's Vyasasana? Maybe he'll get off and then Prabhupada will see. So then what happened is, I was thinking like this. I was waiting for Prabhupada. And Madhavista Swami was leading kirtan. Everyone was dancing and everything. One devotee, his name was Guru Das. He was just going like this, looking. He was like on the edge of the stage going like this for about 10 minutes. And then he looked at me and he went like this. And I was thinking, he's not talking to me. This must be somebody else. So then he came all the way down, grabbed me by the hand. He said, Prabhupada wants you to come on stage. I said, Prabhupada? Where is Prabhupada? This is my first meeting with my Guru Maharaj. I'm explaining this story to you. So then I went up on stage. And then when I looked at his face, I understood, oh my God, this must be Prabhupada. Because he was so grave and so... And he smiled at me. And he called me over. He went like this. He was sitting on his Vyasasana. He called me over. All the other devotees were dancing. He called me over. And I went and I stood. And then he told me to sit down right at his feet. He said, "You sit. Please sit here." So I sat down and then he patted me on the head. And he said, "Every night you sit here." And then I sat there, and I was so, compared to the other devotees, I was so dirty looking, my God. They were all clean shaved, tilaks, nice robes and kurtas and decorated saris. And I had this old dhoti that was a year old with holes in it, and it was only up to here, to my knees, and it was river stained white, and then a little old chadar with holes in it, and hair that hadn't been cut in 4 years, hadn't been combed in a year and a half, hadn't shaved in a year and a half, huh? And here I am sitting with all these effulgent transcendental Vaishnavas, and Prabhupada just, "You stay here." And I sat, and then Prabhupada chanted Jai Radha Madhava. No, he didn't chant Radha Madhava then. I don't believe he chanted that. But he gave his lecture. He gave lecture. And I was listening to the lecture. And I remember within 30 seconds after he spoke, my heart began to cry out that this is your Guru Maharaj. And you must, he's very old, you must surrender to him immediately. My heart was just crying that out. But my mind was saying, no. This is all sentiment. There are so many gurus. I've met so many dozens and hundreds of gurus. All of them are so great. So my heart accepted him, but my mind did not. This was within 30 seconds after sitting next to him. And then after he gave his lecture, he got up to walk away. And, you know, living in India, I was used to touching holy men's feet. I would go everywhere and touch holy men's feet. So I reached down to touch his feet, and one devotee, he grabbed my hand, he kicked my hand, and said, "No, nobody touches Prabhupada's feet." There was a law, no one was allowed to touch Prabhupada's feet. In fact, devotees would keep everybody away. Nobody was allowed to touch his feet. Devotees used to keep people back when he would walk away so no one could touch him. But then Prabhupada looked at me. First he told the other devotee to go away. He said, no, go away. He said, "He can touch my feet." So then I took the dust from his feet and put it on my head. And he said, "You can touch my feet." And then he walked away. So why he called me to sit next to him, to this day I do not know. All I can understand is it was his causeless mercy. Of course, I did not accept him as my guru officially then. I was so mixed up with so many other people that I was learning from. I could say that the seed of my spiritual conception took place in Bombay. But my birth was in Vrindavan. Because it was in Vrindavan that I met Prabhupada again about 1 year later. No, it was not a year later. It was about 4 months later. I met him again in Vrindavan. And there he showed very, very great kindness to me. All the other devotees were against me. They thought I was a sahajya and everything else because I was living in Vrindavan. And I was. But Prabhupada didn't care. Prabhupada showed his love, his kindness. I did not deserve anything, and he gave me everything. And he's still giving.
although we are so hesitant to accept it, you're still giving everything. And I have that faith that for the rest of eternity, Srila Prabhupada will be giving us everything. But our great unfortunate condition is we are not willing to accept it. So on this most blessed and auspicious occasion of Srila Prabhupada's Vyas Puja, we should remember him. We should remember that it is either directly or indirectly by his infinite mercy that Krishna has come into our lives. So let us offer our deep, deep prayers and love to Srila Prabhupada on this day. Srila Prabhupada's most dear and beloved godbrother, who after Srila Prabhupada left this world, helped his disciples in so many ways out of love for Prabhupada and love for us, His Divine Grace Srila Sridhar Dev Maharaj. He told us on one occasion that your Swami Maharaj, he was a Shakta Vaishavatar. And coming from an exalted soul like this, we could understand that not only from our little neophyte position, but even those great Paramhamsas, dear friends of Prabhupada, they could also perceive his unparalleled